Afternoon Theatre.
The Terrible Connection by Michael Robson, with Nigel Stock as Inspector Millions, Anthony Hall as Dynasty Shawcard, and Leanne Orkin as Lady Eleanor Delahunty. The Terrible Connection.
Upon my soul, what was that?
Could it have been...
It sounded like... Let me draw back the curtains.
Do you see anything?
Confounded fog. I see nothing but yellow fog.
A spar cracking on a ship, perhaps.
Sounded like a pistol.
Oh, couldn't have been, surely not.
My dear Roland, if this were Somerset and the hour earlier, I should swear that a gamekeeper were about his business.
Well, well, come away by the fire. Guessing is futile, Lisbon, and we have matters on hand.
That sound put me in mind of the martial activities of young Robert. What an admirable marksman he was. Had the fates been kinder, we might even now have been discussing my son's forthcoming marriage and not my nephew's.
You must not let old griefs impair the pleasure of the present occasion. Let us rather rejoice in the good fortune that has brought Cluny and Caroline together. For a better sorted pair of bright young creatures I never saw.
You are indeed happy in your daughter.
And you in your nephew. Cluny has the gentlest, most helpful nature in the world.
Come then, the settlement.
To remind you, Caroline shall have upon her marriage with Cluny a dowry of £12,000.
Mm.
In addition, she shall receive on my death my estates in Rutland and North Britain.
Undeniably generous in you, sir. For my part, I shall increase Cluny's annuity to £1,000, and shall purchase for himself and Caroline a house in whatever part of London they so desire. Aside of this, a sum of £3,000 on his marriage, and an additional £1,000 for each and every child the happy couple may, at some future time or times, bless themselves and us with...
There, you've forgotten nothing, dear old friend.
I believe I have.
Hmm?
A glass of sherry wine before we join the ladies, huh?
Papa, Lady Delahunty and I are in such a commotion. The most important day of our lives, and Cluny not yet arrived.
I dare say he's attending some academic business or other and will be with us presently. It's only 7 now. Eleanor, my dear, could it be you have a chill? You look uncommon pale.
I am disturbed, I suppose. My Polly has vanished and I can find her nowhere, though I called and called from the door for minutes on end.
Your Polly, a new maid?
My cat, sir, my cat. Surely you've not forgotten her.
Oh, to be sure, Polly. A worse-featured animal with more malevolence in its gaze would be hard to find on the face of the earth.
You quiz her, Roland, confess it. You quiz my wife.
I believe I may be guilty of the luxury of a little teasing. But I must own to some sort of amazement that a human being will so discompose herself about the temporary absence of a selfish and perfectly capable cat.
You will forgive me if I find your levity not much to my taste this evening, Roland.
Oh, come, my dear. You creatures of the gentler sex are too sensible by half. Cats were created to look after themselves, which is more than most of us are, I dare say.
Mr. Wilbraham presents his compliments, Sir Lisbon, and may he warm his hands by the fire a little.
Thank you, Greenleaf. Lady Delahunty, Caroline, Sir Lisbon, Mr. Stanley, what can I say to excuse the extravagance of my behaviour?
We long to hear from you, Cluny.
Well, it was the books.
Put your dreary volumes down this minute and show some interest in the matter of our engagement, do.
Very well. And I promise most faithfully to stay away from the bookshop of Palate and Kidney until you advise me to the contrary.
Have a care, Mr. Wilbraham, lest I forbid you Pump Street forever.
Well now. I must, like any good speaker, bring this house to order.
Oh, yes, Ben.
Caroline, my dear, Cluny, my nephew, Mr. Stanyhurst and I are well agreed on the subject of your engagement and matrimony. It only remains for us to wish you every happiness that the future may hold, and to hope that...
I beg your pardon, Sir Lisbon.
Well, Greenleaf, well, the matter?
There's a Mr. Shawcard outside, sir, wishing to speak to you urgent.
Mr. Shawcard? Was I expecting him, Greenleaf?
He says he's from the detective, sir, and about his investigations.
You will appreciate, I'm certain, Mr. Shorecard, that I hesitate to allow discussions of violence to appall the sensibilities of my guests.
Indeed, sir. And my thanks for your forbearance in the matter of my interrupting a scene of social harmony and decent joy. And now, if we may just run through the facts as we seem to have noted them.
By all means.
At the time when you heard the shot, you were here in the study with Mr. Stonyhurst.
Stonyhurst, yes.
Forgive me, sir, I'm sure. Mr. Stonyhurst. That gentleman's daughter, together with Lady Delahunty, were in the withdrawing room, and they heard nothing.
They made no mention of it, and I'm reluctant to have them questioned now.
To be sure. Brutal murder, sir, is not a subject to be lightly bandied about in the presence of ladies of quality. Now, the remaining member of your party?
My nephew, Mr. Wilbraham. He came down from Pont Street by hackney coach and joined us a little after 7.
From Pont Street. Good.
Is there anything else?
Neighbours, sir. A matter of your neighbours. This call here, as you'll have doubtless inferred, is but one of many a long Cheney Walk that I'm making. It would assist
on your right, the Duke of Kidderminster. On my left, Sir Dunstable Hart... as you were. On my right, Sir Dunstable Harty. On your left, the Duke of Kidderminster.
Being as we are, sir, at this moment, tete-a-tete, am I to induce, sir, that both Duke and Knight are sharing one and the same residence?
Oh, you did well, Shorecard. On your toes, even with the quality. You covered the ground and no mistake. But who is the corpse? Without the identity of the victim, which way are we to turn? No identity, no motive. No motive, no murderer.
Nothing in his pockets, nothing in his coats, nothing in his hatband, nothing on his fingers, nothing concealed in his boots.
But the clothing, what was it like?
No time, sir, for a close examination. One side collaborated with the constable on duty that the deceased was no less than that. I made it my business to embark upon the investigative process as quick as you like.
No blame attaches to you, lad. You did your best in foggy and trying circumstances. And the clothing of the deceased will still be on the body. But my ribs are beginning to ache, Shorecard. And when my ribs begin to ache, I know we're in for the deuce of an investigation. Now picture it for yourself. An unknown corpse on Cheney Walk. Man in the prime of life done to death in a quality neighbourhood. Voices will be raised, Shorecard. And those voices will cry for a speedy arrest and a smart trial. The gentry may care nothing for 30 such deaths on the old Kent Road. But let violence appear on their own doorsteps, and they're sharp enough to protest. Where's the body now?
Rotherhithe, sir, in Meldrum's cellar.
Shall I remove the sheet, gents?
I should count it a privilege. And sure, Card, nearer with that lamp. We shall be hard put to it to assess the late lamented's facial characteristics, since there's so precious little of the face remaining. Yeah, coat by Bantock and Weevil.
They've been out of business 5 years.
Boots? Soft leather, good condition. Hardly down at heel. Breeches, distinctly stylish, if the diagonal cut takes your fancy. Cravat, too much blood. Waistcoat, snug to the breast and bespoke tailored. That. Where's the corpse's tit for Meldrum?
I thought, Your Honour, being as how the gent is now beyond the need of acts, that I would...
Fetch it, Meldrum. Yes. Unless you want a spell in the colonies. Well, lad, what's your interpretation?
A pistol ball from close range has done the damage we see to the face and skull, sir. Such brains as the fellow had are now to be found broadcast over Cheyne Walk. But from the style of the deceased apparel, and from the cleanness and softness of the deceased's fingers, I venture to propose that he was in what might be termed a comfortable way of life. That is, until said face came into contact with said pistol ball.
I admire your forensic ingenuity, sure, God. It augurs well for a lad pursuing a career in the detective.
Here it is, sir, and none the worse.
Give it here, man. There's nothing here to distinguish it from a thousand similar hats in quality London. My ribs are aching cruel. Until we find who this man was, they'll ache some more. But be sure of this. The murder in Cheyne Walk is no common felony.
But, Ma, it's after 10 now. Theo's never kept me waiting before, and he's 3 hours late. 3 whole dreadful hours.
You must stop giving way like this, Hester. The tears are making you quite plain. Mr. Didwallace is a busy man.
But he was engaged to take me to the music hall, Ma. He promised in the hearing of you, me, and the ancient thief.
But the fog, child. Consider the fog and the difficulties of securing a hackney coach.
To think of the catalogue of varied delights we've missed, Ma. How I've longed to hear the admirable Miss Clissold, the coloratura from Colwyn Bay. And when shall we see such an evening again?
Tomorrow, I fancy, if Mr. Didwallace is as good as his word.
Oh! Come in! Come in! Oh, do come in!
Do I intrude? Do I enter upon a scene of private grief?
Thika! Why are you come here yet again?
I had hoped, Theka, that you might be about the streets hunting for Mr. Didwallace. You profess him to be a friend, do you not?
Old friends is best friends, Mrs. Tang. A platitude, perhaps, but the ancient Theka was never a man to shun a platitude when it bore on the truth.
What truth, pray?
Go away, you hateful fellow. I know how your mind runs.
With good reason, Miss Hester. I have made no secret of the depth of my feeling for you. Such depth, I am bound to add, may well be found wanting in the aforementioned Mr. Didwallace.
Get him out of here, Ma. He shan't insult Theo like this.
I must ask you to leave us, sir.
But this Theo Didwallace, whose late arrival is causing Miss Hester such concern, what do we truly know about him?
That he's a man of means and charm and irreproachable behaviour. A man of honour.
A man of means, you say? But whence come those means? Whence came that abrupt change of fortune that enabled him to talk large and to spend large and to live more large across the river?
You ask and you ask, you hateful man, but you give us no answers.
I know what I know. Namely, that Mr. Didwallace has used me as he has used you, ladies.
Sir, I would ask you this. When Mr. Didwallace appears, bearing, as I know he will, ample explanations for his lateness, will you have the courage to repeat your insinuations to his face?
Mrs. T, if we have not seen the last of Theo Didwallace, then call me the ancient Theka no more.
I'm deeply distressed, Caroline, that the pleasure of your engagement should have been overshadowed, however briefly, by this appalling murder. I can only charge you both to put it from your memories forthwith.
We shall, Papa, as soon as we are able. Oh, but it upset you, Clooney, most dreadfully. And I know her ladyship was deeply moved.
No one of sentiment could fail to be moved by the violent carrying off of another human being.
And on such a night, so bleak, so dank.
This may be small comfort to you both, and perhaps none at all. I offer it merely as an observation. The man who meets a violent death at the hands of another is seldom free from some contribution to those passionate emotions and criminal thoughts that have first entertained the notion of murder. In a society such as ours, where men need scarcely to rob for food or kill to remain alive themselves, there is generally to be found a terrible connection between the assassin and the slain.
Oh, same again twice. And more gravy.
Coming, Mr. Millions.
A hot meat pie with gravy and a pint of strong tea taken at midnight fortify a man against the inroads of fog and damp and melancholy and weariness. For the price of Tuppence Farthing Sure Card, we possess and we enjoy two prime panaceas.
Can't eat twice.
Yes, my friend is paying, Clara. Oh, yeah. Hold out your claws to him.
Robbery. Why not plain robbery?
Robbery is tempting, lad, and robbery has been done. But think again. Who would use a pistol on a foggy night and when a skillful blow to the head with a weighted stick would be cheaper, quieter, and, if the assailant were later apprehended, safer by far?
Well, was he followed or was he met?
Was he followed or was he met? Good. From the direction taken by the pistol ball, we may safely assume he saw his assailant face to face.
And why Cheney walk, sir? What was he doing there? And where was he going? Why Cheney walk at six of a foggy evening? The tender passion?
Yes, well, it can't be ignored. Men have died for less.
Returning to his home in some Chelsea terrace? Personal or business call in the neighbourhood? A genuine constitutional? I try, sir. My net is widely cast.
When you return to your lodgings, when you cast your tired head on the pillow, reflect on this hypothesis. And it can only be regarded as an hypothesis for the time being. What if our unknown victim were shot by one party and robbed by another?
Eleanor, you startled me, coming down so late.
I'm sorry.
Why aren't you asleep, my dear?
I came to ask you the same question. It's after midnight and your fire is low.
I couldn't possibly sleep. My mind is seething.
Would you care for a brandy? Shall I send for Greenleaf?
No, I've drunk too much brandy already, and Greenleaf has been retired an hour or more.
It is this murder, is it not, that is troubling you?
Eleanor, what is so disquieting is that the identity of the victim is so far unknown.
Unknown? How unknown?
I did not wish to cast a further shadow over the engagement party when we had all been so thoroughly discomposed by this appalling news, but the man Surecard called back later to tell me that the victim was robbed as well as murdered, robbed of all identification.
Oh, dreadful. Dreadful!
But, Eleanor, don't you see? It could well be poor Harry Gifford, who was killed 6 hours ago.
Your secretary? Oh, but why should anyone...
Murdered in the fog, not 20 yards from my house, in mistake for myself.
Millions of the detective.
We had one of your young fellows round last evening... Twice.
Inspector Millions, and you would be...
Education Greenleaf, sir, butler to this establishment.
And the pivot or fulcrum of its many activities, if I'm not mistaken. Mr. Greenleaf, I crave a word in your ear.
Privileged, Inspector. Will you step into my snug?
I can see virtually nothing beyond your window pane. An ugly fog this morning. An eerie fog. A fog that can be a fit companion only for deeds of stealth. Touching the current case, Mr. Greenleaf, we have our work cut out. We do indeed. The identity of the deceased is unknown as yet.
Not having viewed the remnants, as it were, I regret I can be of no assistance in that particular.
Since this is a neighbourhood in which reside many gentlemen and some peerage connected with government, I'm beginning to ask myself if there may not be a political motive behind this slaying.
As to that, sir...
Mr. Greenleaf, I judge you to be a man of industry and lively intelligence. Tell me about your master. Has he political aspirations, or does he slumber tactfully in the back benches of the House of Commons?
What I can divulge of Sir Lisbon's parliamentary future must be regarded as entirely confidential, Inspector.
And it shall be so. Entertain no fears on that score.
Since my remarks last night evidently alarmed you, Eleanor, I must attempt some explanation. Cast your mind back, if you will, to that desperate afternoon of January 1843.
A January. 15 years ago. Ah! You're referring to the McNaughton affair.
Just so. Edward Drummond, secretary to Sir Robert Peel, was shot by McNaughton, who wrongly supposed him to be the Prime Minister.
But McNaughton was judged to be insane.
Insane or not, his pistol killed poor Drummond.
Yes. Yes, but this is an appalling speculation.
So far as I am aware, only the members of the Cabinet know that I'm in direct line for the Supreme Office. But suppose some eccentric, some agitator, had received word of this intelligence, that he knew that in a month's time I might well be Prime Minister. Might I too be a target for an assassin's venom? Might not some poor fellow have died last night because he was mistaken for me?
I think we must make every effort to leave for Somerset tomorrow, Lisbon. Nothing but harm, I feel sure, can come of our remaining in Chelsea under the cloud of this present horror.
I am most grateful to you for this information, Greenleaf. It may well prove vital to our fuller understanding of this case. Nevertheless... snuff, sir?
No, thank you.
Nevertheless... we must be aware that robbery might have been the motive. Greed is generally much closer to the human heart than political altruism.
I would not attempt to hazard any kind of guess. My time has been fully occupied in calming the fears of the female domestics of the household.
Let us then concentrate on robbery a moment. Have you, or any of your staff, noticed any persistent and suspicious loiterers in Cheyne Walk of late?
It's strange and even uncanny that you should ask that, sir.
Why so?
Because, sir... And this must be kept also confidential, because some 3 months ago, this house was burgled.
Anything of value taken?
If you deem her ladyship's jewels of value, sir, then yes, much of value was taken. And all this whilst the master was in Somerset.
Was the theft reported immediately to officers of the police?
No, sir, it was not. And I must again beseech you to respect this confidence.
But why, man? Why?
To protect Sir Lisbon's peace of mind and future hopes is why, sir. Domestic mishaps troubled him greatly, and graver incidents would affect his performance in the House of Commons notorious. Her ladyship enjoined me to say nothing, and she begged me to secure the pledge from the staff, all of whom helped in the search for the jewels, to say nothing likewise to the master.
Mr. Education Greenleaf is a close card and no mistake. Talk of a robbery, no robbery reported. Talk of secrets and a grand divulging of secrets.
Is you, sir? Is it, sir?
Damn you, lad, for springing suddenly out on a man out of the fog. Oh, my heart races. It pounds, sure, Carl.
Begging your pardon, sir, but how was I to know the man was you unless I come up very close to peer, as it were, at his features?
Why are you here? What do you want?
If we step along together, sir, in this direction... Mark that lamppost, sir! I can report to you that we may well have established the identity of the dead man's robber.
Oh, tell me!
Myself and the local constabulary, having talked to the bargees and lighter men along this stretch of the Thames,
yes. We
eventually ears of a singular ruffian named Dead Bob,
who
wants these precincts for broken meats, stray fish, old clothes, and gents in their cups, from whom same said Dead Bob may pick the pockets of. Now, this Dead Bob, though seen earlier yesterday afternoon lurking not far from the scene of the crime, has been spotted by no one since the time of the murder.
Dead Bob, I don't know the name. Has he a record of vicious assault?
Sly boots, sir, you'd call him. Not a lad of metal. Besides which fact, Dead Bob is approximating 14 years of age.
What?
And whose head, sir, would not touch your breastbone. Presuming him to be so bold as to attempt such proximity to your person, sir, which I give leave to doubt.
Mm.
But if the urchin ain't been seen since the time of the murder, then where is he to be found?
For the expenditure of a penny halfpenny, which sum I hope to recover as just out-of-pocket expenses, sir, I opened the lips of a gin soak, sufficient for him to tell me that dead Bob may well be laying low in Sergeant Clench's original shooting gallery in Victoria.
Oh, two sporting gents do I see. Step lively and step over here, sirs, and what will we try today? Broadsword, bagonet, pistol or musket, flintlock, matchlock, we lock all for a penny more, the latest and swiftest of percussion cap revolvers. Show us your skill, sirs, a penny a time.
Millions and sure card of the detective.
Inspector Millions. The same as who nabbed the poisoner of Wapping Old Stairs 6 years ago.
I had that privilege, Sergeant.
My privilege, sir, all mine. May I shake the hand that broke the neck of Minstrel Thompson?
You may, sir. But in the interest of verbatim accuracy, I should instruct you that it was the hangman's noose that snapped the minstrel's neck.
A bold figure of mine, sir, and one I hope you'll forgive. But I see you mustered here for action.
We wish to put a few questions to one dead Bob, a loiterer and light fingers.
Kelso Miracle, allowed the lad might be here.
Kelso Miracle. 25 years with the colours and now a slave to gin.
Dead Bob. Dead Bob is the person we need and desire.
And dead Bob you shall have. Point the guns at the target, gentlemen, and not at the mirror! If you'll be so good as to step his way, always being careful to avoid stray shot from uncommon careless marksmen, as might approve a little musketry against the detective. There, sirs, is dead Bob. Sprawled in a corner of the fireplace and dead to the world these 9 hours past.
Wake the lad as gentle as you like, Sergeant Clench, but wake the lad. We have questions to ask and he has answers to give. A matter of murder, Sergeant, is why we're here. And dead Bob has been looting the corpse on the battlefield.
Ugly, ugly. Is it a jail for him then?
Jail or freedom, the decision rests with dead Bob.
Who's a calling a dead Bob? Is it thee, Saul Grimes?
Sit up, lad, and uncover your face. Two officers here to put a question to you, so sit up and take notice, dead Bob.
I'm here lawful, gents. The sergeant kindly allowed me to sleep here, gents.
Poor, you reek of gin, boy. There's gin at every pore of your filthy little body. Where'd you get the cash to buy the gin, boy? Where did you lift the chinks?
Kelso Miracle. He gave us a mug of gin last night, sir, and went to me head. Had me tumbling through the courts and alleys and me spinning sick, sir. That's the truth.
Kelso Miracle don't give away gin to Arabs like you, dead Bob. It was you who stood the miracle of swallow of gin last night. And how did you come into cash?
Oh, I don't remember nothing. The gin like to take me senses away.
Hear me, dead Bob, and hear me well. Foul murder was done in Cheyne Walk last night, and you were in Cheyne Walk last night, and the dead man was robbed last night, and you had sudden cash last night. And I shall see you swing for it, unless you come to clean with me.
I never shot him, sir. I swear I never pulled no trigger.
Ah. Who mentioned triggers, eh? Who spoke of guns? Not I. Not Dynasty Surecard. Not Sergeant Clench. So what are you doing, speaking of guns and triggers? We wait, dead Bob.
Tell him, boy. Ease your soul and tell him. The inspector here's a terrible man to cross, and he'll have you on the gallows before the old year's out.
I heard it, sir. I heard the bang of a gun. It was a full fog, sir, and I saw nothing, only the fog, and footsteps running off.
Footsteps?
What kind of footsteps?
Light or heavy?
Quick or slow?
Male or female?
Yes, sir, just like that. Footsteps, Jim, and in the fog. And I come forward out of fright and wonder, and I sees this gent laying there, sirs, weltering in his gore. And I think, what use is brass to a dead party? And before I know it, these fingers is rife in his pocket,
How much did you prog and pilfer?
A few farthings, sir. It's all it was, I swear.
Upend him, sure, Carl. Jounce and sway him after the man born. Shake dead Bob till his teeth fall about the gallery, and he begins to remember the truth of it all. Sergeant, would you pick up the coins? Set him on his feet, sure card, and empty his pockets of rubbish.
£2, 7 shillings and 6 pence to date.
The very information, sir. An envelope.
Give it here, lad. Dead Bob, come here. Dead Bob. In robbing that unfortunate man, you committed a base crime and held up the course of our inquiries by some 18 hours. For which I fine you a pund. Clench.
Sir!
Keep a sovereign in lieu of rental from the lad. Dead Bob. By hanging on to this scrap of paper, you have delivered into my hands the first shred of direct information in the case. For which assistance, I reward you with £1.07.6.
You ain't gonna stretch my neck.
Go back to sleep, lad, before I'm tempted. Sure card? Here. An envelope addressed to one Theo Did Wallace of 3 Logic Lane, Pimlico. The corpse has a name at last.
But, Clooney, you are still so pale, my dear. Papa, do you think Clooney might have a glass of brandy to fortify himself with?
Of course, of course. Are you unwell, my boy? Has this fog affected your health?
I have matters on my mind which must be revealed to you both, if I am to know any tranquillity in my marriage. They concern my relationship with my uncle, Sir Lisbon.
He loves you, Clooney, loves you as his own son.
His son is what I must speak about now.
Robert, who died so many years ago?
The same. You must know that Sir Lisbon, despite his looking after me for so many years, has never entirely allowed me to forget that at best I am but an indifferent substitute for the son who perished so dreadfully. Now, this would have been understandable had Robert been that paragon of conduct that Sir Lisbon chose to remember. But the truth is that Robert was far from being an ideal son to him.
But what can you know of Robert's life and character? You were scarcely born when he left England on that fatal voyage to India.
I should have known nothing at all had it not been for the good offices of Lady Delahunty. She it was who chose to reveal to me the truth about her son.
You alarm us, Clooney. Oh, what strange misgivings I have.
Then let me make myself clear. I can only say that there was no unkindness, no deceit, no shabby trick that Robert did not practice behind his father's distant back.
This is a dismal, a wretched chronicle.
Worse was to follow. There was a scandal involving the wife of Robert's housemaster. The poor husband did away with himself. The lady was ruined, and to prevent further dishonour, Lady Eleanor persuaded Sir Lisbon to buy Robert a commission in a cavalry regiment, one element of which was instantly to be seconded to the Bombay residency of the East India Company.
I have always admired Lady Delahunty, but never more so than now. How dreadfully appropriate that Robert should have died when he did, without further opportunities for exercising his evidently unnatural vices.
I am relieved that those are your sentiments, sir. If therefore at any time in the future Sir Lisbon should ever change his attitude towards me, I beg you to recall in my defence what I have so reluctantly disclosed to you today.
A dapper area, to be sure. The late Mr. Did Wallace had access to money. Inspector Millions, ma'am, and Mr. Surecard of the detective.
Who summoned you? Not I. Now, I'll give you good day, gentlemen.
Whom have I the honour of addressing, ma'am?
Mistress Oliphant, a widow these 7 years, and a native of Ross and Cromarty. Now, sir, if you will
Mrs.
kindly...
Mrs. Oliphant, I beg you, stop closing the door in our faces. We are here on serious business and must ask you several questions.
Serious, you say? Then you had best ask them inside. Be quiet, Jack. Hold your tongue, Bard. They'll be gone presently.
You have a lively parrot there, ma'am?
But his language inclines to the robust.
So, ma'am, you say that Mr. Did Wallace has been lodging with you for some 3 months.
He has.
When did you last see him?
Why, he took a light luncheon with me yesterday. Trout, rare beef, and a cabbage which he himself provided.
Cabbage, rubbish!
Which he himself provided? Was Mr. Did Wallace in the habit of bringing in his own food?
He is particular only in the matter of the green grocery, sir. When he takes meals in the house, he will generally bring in a green vegetable himself.
Do you recollect what the gentleman was wearing
Samuel,
when he left?
Samuel,
the...
Jack,
Samuel.
I shan't warn you again.
What the gent was wearing when he left the house after your appetizing luncheon, ma'am?
I have grave misgivings. Has something of a tragic nature happened to Mr. Didwallace?
We are not absolutely sure as yet, ma'am. Oh. For this reason, we should be grateful for an answer to Mr. Shurcard's question.
Well, I find it difficult to recall the precise nature of his apparel.
Could there have been a coat by Bantock and Weeble?
Something desperate has occurred, has it not? How else could you know about the coat? My late husband purchased it from the firm you mentioned 7 years ago.
How did Mr. Didwallace come to be wearing your late husband's coat?
One afternoon he came in utterly drenched, having been caught in a violent thunderstorm. He was obliged to go out again quite soon afterwards and required a coat of distinction to wear. I lent him the article by Bantock and Weedle. He wore it, he admired it, and by he purchased it.
And you believe now that it was this very coat that Mr. Didwallace was wearing yesterday?
I don't believe, sir. I think it to be so.
Then I must ask you to prepare yourself for the grave news of whose imminence you have not been entirely unaware as our conversation proceeded.
He had a terror of water.
Gentlemen seldom wash.
A terror of rivers and seas and oceans. I beg you not to tell me he has met the end he feared most.
On that head, ma'am, you may set your mind at rest. Oh. However, the gentleman whom we now firmly believe to have been Mr. Theo Didwallace has met a violent, though I trust mercifully, quick death.
You must forgive Jack. In common with others of his kind, he has no concept of the fitness of things.
I should like now to examine Mr. Didwallace's rooms, ma'am, in an attempt to discover any information relevant to the identity of your late guest's assailant.
Pound of leeks, Mrs. T, and a pair of beets.
These two collies, Mrs. T, and a stone of tatties.
Ma?
4 pence, please, Mr. Gentry.
Ma, I've made up my mind.
A stone of potatoes, was it, Ernest?
I mean it, Ma. Theo's been taken ill, and I shan't rest till I know he's been looked after.
I should think his landlady can very well take care of him if he's indisposed, Hester. From what Theo
beans
says...
Beans is what I'm after, Mrs. Have you got any beans, Mrs.?
Over there, sir, behind the apples. From what Theo says, she's a very capable lady.
Capable or not, Ma, he don't mean to her what he means to me. I shall go to Pimlico directly.
Where's them beans? These ain't beans, these is leeks.
They are indeed, sir. And the beans are where I told you, behind the crate of apples.
Oh, but why didn't you say so, Mrs.?
Once I'm satisfied he's been cared for, I shall come back at once.
Well, hurry along then, my dear, and give him my love.
Whatever he did... He kept you pretty much private. No letters, no bills, no papers.
But a great reader, sir. All them books.
Mm. Devotional texts, for the most part. A Presbyterian strain. Uplifting, to be sure, but without that vivacity which the art of fiction brings to our lives. Hello!
What is it, sir?
Look at this. Very heavy, handsomely bound, and locked. Copy of Areopagitica.
Areopagitica? Would that be one of them obscene publications such as we impounded only last week in the Charing Cross Road?
Areopagitica is evidently one of the works of John Milton Shurcard, if we are to judge by the cover. And the works of John Milton are not remarkable for their scurrilous or erotic content.
But why padlocked? Only time I ever saw a book locked like that was the private diary of that interesting doctor in Clerkenwell.
Ah, and what did we find in that padlocked diary?
Why, sir, details of certain loose ladies in Clerkenwell and Southwark.
Whose lives the interesting doctor ended at 3 weekly intervals. Shall we have the same luck now, Shurcard?
Can but try, sir. Precious little else to excite the fancy in here.
Now, where would the key be found? Gay Bob! After the shaking you gave him, that key will now be lying in some unconsidered corner of Sergeant Clinch's original shooting gallery. Force majeure is called for. Give us your clasp knife, lad.
Have a care the blade don't double back on you and slice your thumb to the bone.
Mm. It's beginning. Healed. A little... There! Now, title page in perfect order. Yes, Areopagitica seems a remarkably earnest work.
Hello again! Cash.
And more cash. It's a private safe is what it is, sir. How much would there be?
Something close to £2,000. At a conservative estimate.
£2,000? Enough to set up a man very handsomely for the rest of his life.
Enough for some men. Enough for many men. But was it enough for Theo Did Wallace? Why keep it here? Why not bank it? My ribs are burning, lad. Was this money part of some grander scheme? My ribs assure me that it was.
Milady.
Greenleaf, would you close the door a moment? Greenleaf, I understand that a senior member of the detective force was here this morning and that he spent some time in conclave with you.
I had the privilege of assisting Inspector Millions with his inquiries, Your Ladyship.
Inspector Millions? Is he not the officer who unmasked the poisoner of Wapping Old Stairs?
And Dr. Mansipul, the butcher of Clerkenwell, and Minstrel Thompson, and Captain McBride, who slew his aunt for gain. That is Inspector Millions, milady, a very regular and pertinacious sleuth.
We are fortunate, are we not, to have such a veteran of crime to investigate this terrible murder?
I form the highest regard for his skill and tact, milady.
Might I ask what passed between you?
The inspector was eager to discover if the murder had political implications, Your Ladyship.
A gentleman of the name of Collins, sir, an attorney, wishing to have private words with you.
About the murder?
I asked him that, sir, and he says it may or may not be relative to the murder, sir, but it is relative to the unidentified victim of the murder.
They hedge and hedge about these men of law. To them nothing is simple except a fee. Send him in, lad.
Yes, sir. This way, sir, if you please. Inspector, this is Mr. Collinge of Collinge and Brimacombe in Chancery Lane.
Honoured, sir, honoured. I have, of course, seen you not infrequently about the Central Criminal Court.
And are you, Inspector, gratified to make your acquaintance?
Thank you, sure card. Pray be seated.
Thank you, sir. Where?
Oh, books, sir. Registers, books and papers. Little consequence. Hurl them off, sir, hurl them off. Ah, capital. Capital. Now, Mr. Collinge, to what do I owe the pleasure of this visit?
I am come, sir, relative to the victim of the murder on Cheney Walk.
You knew the man?
I know nothing of him. I wish to know nothing of him. I act upon the instructions of a certain party, who shall be nameless, and who has provided me with the financial means to arrange a Christian burial for the murder victim in the churchyard of St. Joshua's in the Fields.
A captivating spot in which to spend your eternal rest, I'll be bound.
As to that, I have no opinion and no interest. My instructions were to make the request. I have made the request.
Mr. Collinge, you say that the party who supplied the burial costs shall be nameless. What does that mean?
I cannot help you, sir. £40 in gold is more than enough for a Christian burial in St. Joshua's in the Fields. Is there any reason why the request should not be met?
None, sir, that I can envisage once the inquest has taken place.
And that will be?
Tomorrow at the town hall in Chelsea.
Thereafter, may the request be granted.
I shall speak to the commissioner, sir, on your nameless client's behalf.
I am obliged to, Inspector.
If I were to reveal the identity of the murdered man to you, could I expect you to be candid with me?
Candour is not a word I care for. What does it mean at law? It has no place at law.
I am an officer of the law, Mr. Collinge, and you are one of its practitioners. In these capacities, I ask you this. Is the name Theo Did Wallace known to you?
It is not.
Have you any notion how the unknown benefactor came by the news of the murder?
Notions, notions. Examine the facts, sir. This morning's newspaper carries a graphic account of this desperate felony.
So, you volunteered to the inspector the information relative to the loss of the jewels.
What was the alternative, milady? The inspector himself may yet examine the other members of the household. Had I refrained from mentioning it altogether, it could only have led to graver embarrassments later on.
Very true. You did well, Greenleaf.
thankful to have been of some small service, my lady.
And is Polly returned?
Returned and feasting on halibut in the odd man's yard, my lady.
When she is quite replete, send Nell up with her greenleaf. I hope for all our sakes that we shall hear no more from the gentleman of the detective.
Great though your distress must be, girl, be consoled with the fact that Mr. Didwallace escaped drowning, a fate that was often on his mind.
But, ma'am, who could have done such a dreadful thing to Theo? He was the kindest, most courteous man in the world.
You must compose yourself, miss. If you want to see the murderer brought to book, and who could not pray, then your first course must be to stifle your grief and visit those detective gentlemen, Mr. Millions and Mr. Shurkard.
She was too overcome with distress, sir, according to the constable outside, to remain here until we returned. She has seemingly repaired to the bosom of her ma, one Emily Tang, who keeps a greengrocery and allied provisions hard by the Elephant and Castle.
Then, I suppose, we shall have to cross the river and examine this misery-sodden young lady.
I'm sorry, Inspector, but the doctor was most insistent that Hester should take to her bed. He administered a little laudanum, and she will, God being merciful, sleep until morning.
Far be it from me to intrude upon the medicated slumbers of your daughter, ma'am. But you must understand that any delay can only assist the murderer to escape scot-free.
Hester is insensible, sir, and has been this last hour.
Perhaps, in the interim, this good lady may be able to furnish us with certain needed items of information.
I believe in February of this year, he was partial to green vegetables.
Which fact has been corroborated by his erstwhile landlady, Mrs. Oliphant of Pimlico.
Modesty somewhat inhibits me, but accuracy impels me to state that Hester and I are not the kind of persons you might normally expect to find purveying greengroceries by the Elephant and Castle.
I had made certain assumptions of that nature, ma'am.
No one of perception could fail to. For this reason, Mr. Didwallace, himself a gentleman of breeding, came to regard our little premises as something of an oasis in the barren social landscape of these southern boroughs.
Wasn't long, perhaps, before the late deceased was himself sat here, sipping beef tea and other gentle stimulants in the presence of yourself and Miss Hester.
Such indeed was the case, Mr. Shurkard. I must allow that I did not discourage these visits of his, inclining as he was to note poor Hester with an eye of favour.
Which she, perchance, shyly returned?
I think we may conclude that by November some kind of understanding had been reached between the two young people.
Did you discover the nature of Mr. Didwallace's employment, or the source of his income?
He held, I believe, a number of shares in overseas ventures. At the end of September he received a very handsome dividend.
How did this windfall manifest itself, Mrs. Tang?
Why, generously. He entertained myself and Hester to an elegant dinner at Thrasher's Hotel in Lower Fleet Street. Salmon, Inspector.
Ooh.
And a half dozen fowl.
My
three
word.
Bottles of claret and one of Madeira. A syllabub, Mr. Shurkard, it's and a glass of the crustiest port.
And green vegetables.
£2 of broad beans, well buttered, which gave Mr. Didwallace the most refined of pleasures.
Mrs. Tang, in the gentleman's subsequent visits to your greengrocery, did he give any indication of future financial hopes?
He gave us to understand that by the end of this month he intended to conclude certain business affairs and repair to Somerset, where he maintained a charming and genteel mansion.
A mansion in Somerset, Shurkard. Did he say where the mansion was situated in that county, ma'am?
Why, yes, he did. It was near a village called Lumsden Magna. Oh, but how can this...
He hope to bear away your daughter as Mrs. Didwallace, soon to be the mistress of this country dwelling?
That has been our constant inference, sir.
Yet the sombre fact remains that someone murdered Mr. Didwallace. Or cannot have been as roseate in his path as you were led to assume.
What the lad means is this. Did the gentleman, to your knowledge, have any ill wishes, bad friends, malicious connections?
He spoke of none to us, nor could his nature have admitted of such.
Just so. But apart from yourself and Miss Hester, was he on terms of intimacy with anyone else in this neighbourhood?
His was a sublimely generous nature. From time to time, he would entertain our lodger in some public house to which that person is attached.
And the fortunate lodger would be?
The ancient thicker, gentlemen. Please be seated.
Your servant, sir.
Gin?
Aye.
Gin?
No, at present. We are here in respect of the late Mr. Theo Didwallis, a gent well known to you.
Whatever I can say, I shall say. Item said Didwallis was no friend of mine.
We were given to understand otherwise.
We were led to assume that he and you were boon companions, no less, on many a convivial evening at your favourite public house.
It is true that he plied me with drink in the back bar of the Fife and Drummer, but not from friendship. Never from friendship.
Then why, Thicker? Why?
I eventually descried a twofold intention in his abnormal hospitality, gents. He knew me to be a professed suitor for the hand of Miss Esther Tang, and hoped by frequently rendering me insensible to steal a march on me and thereby confound my suit.
The which confounding he evidently achieved.
He stole her from my bosom, sirs. From me, will have cherished that gentle creature since 53, when she was still at a dame school in Edmonton and here irregularly on that account.
So he thwarted you in love, sir. But you spoke of a twofold intention.
His soiled, dishonoured affection for Miss Esther sprang from no pure passion. It was mercenary, sirs.
We cannot accept that the financial returns from such a business would be such as to attract a flash gent like Didwallis. Plainly, sir, there ain't the money in the green.
A sprat to catch a mackerel, sir. There were, to continue the marine metaphor, other fish to fry.
You disliked and mistrusted the fellow.
That I cannot gainsay, Mr. Shawcar.
Then tell me this. Where were you on or about 6 o'clock of the evening of the 19th inst?
Where was I? You think I done him in? Swing for that wretch.
Where? Were you? Thicker.
I was on a high stool, third from the right, in the second office as you're coming from Chancery Lane. If you was to be paying a visit to them justly famed solicitors and notaries public, Collinge and Brimacombe.
Collinge and Brimacombe, sir?
The same. And known to you, detective gents, I'll be sworn.
We shall verify, Thicker. Be sure of that.
Oh, do, sir, oh, do. And I think you'll find that no clerk in the service of Collinge and Brimacombe quits his stool much before 7:30 of an evening.
But what is this to do with Didwallis?
It was because of my long employment with that firm that he professed friendship for me. I inadvertently let slip, when lyrical with brandy, and I reproach myself daily for it, that a certain party, known to him and me, was in receipt of a regular allowance through Collinge and Brimacombe, paid in cash by me quarterly.
The certain party being, perhaps, a lady of gentle station who keeps a green grocery and allied provisions hired by the Elephant and Castle.
To say more would be to compound my rashness in admitting the same to Theo Didwallis.
But you do not rebut my assistant's identification.
These lips is sealed, sir, in shame and humiliation. But one thing more. Shortly after I let slip in my unguarded cups this unusual tidbit of commercial information, something was up at Collinge and Brimacombe's. My eye, but something was very much up and queer. Mr. Collinge himself took charge of certain aspects of security, gentlemen, in the matter of locks changed, keys cuts, windows further barred. Why he undertook these provisions is unknown to me. What is known to me is that very soon after these precautions have been taken, Theo Didwallis is arrived here with fine suitings and a silver top cane, and takes Mrs. Tang and her lovely offspring to a knife and forker in Fleet Street, and himself to a highly expensive set of rooms in Pimlico.
Collinge is an astute and dangerous man, Shawcar. We must meet cunning with cunning, lad, and devilishness with the like.
If you was to engage him in conversation in his office, sir, and if I, behind closed doors, was to cast a very sharp eye about his general office, who knows what I might discover?
This is outrageous. If you're caught a prying, lad, it's the end of your career in the detective. If you find what we need, you're a made man.
There can be nothing for us to discuss. It is late, and I have gentlemen to meet at my club. Now, if you will kindly excuse me...
I'll keep you no more than 3 minutes, sir, by your clock or my watch, whichever you propose.
As you well know, sire, the firm of Collins and Brimacombe acts for many of the gentry and nobility of this country and can in no way be associated with random murder.
But it can, sir. Let me assure you that the victim discovered some 3 months ago a certain arrangement concluded by your firm that made Mrs. Emily Tang of the Elephant and Castle recipient of a certain sum quarterly.
As to that,
shortly after his making that discovery, there was a burglary, break-in, exploratory visit, call it what you will, effected on these premises, subsequent to which you made every effort to ensure that such another visit would be humanly impossible.
Am I to take these assumptions seriously?
I contend that the late Theo Did Wallace found the information he sought on your premises, and that having found it, he embarked upon a career of blackmail, for which he paid the heaviest penalty on the 19th of this month.
Supposition, sir. All supposition. The law has no care for theory, sir, but only for fact.
I believe that in some way the party who paid your clerk burial money for Did Wallace and the party whom Did Wallace was blackmailing were intimately connected, and that all the information I require, all the confirmation I need, will be found amongst the deed boxes of this firm.
In all this gossamer of conjecture, there is not one item that you can prove. I warned you before that taciturnity is my profession. Oh, come, sir, come. You know the way of the world in these matters as well as I do. And so, I must respectfully ask you to take your leave. I have other duties, other appointments.
You have cats on the premises?
Cats? Who is there?
No one, sir, that I can see or you can observe.
You are becoming exasperating to me, Inspector. I hope it will not be necessary for me to pay a call on your commissioner.
That must be your decision, Mr. Collins. Good night, sir.
Psst! Psst! Sure, Card. Are you there?
Yes, sir. Oh, that was a near thing.
Close runner, no mistake. You were nimble out of that office, lad. Fleet as a doe. Now, what did you find? Keep your voice down, lad.
The ancient figure has his wits about him, little though we may wish to admit same. A number of deed boxes had new padlocks, and all the deed boxes had fresh iron clamps.
Did they, by gad? From the infernal pandemonium you were making, I had supposed you'd be hurling the boxes about the room. Mr. Collins was discomposed.
I had to crawl, sir. I had to hunt about. The information we sought, need it be said, did not yield itself readily. But 4 deed boxes had new padlocks.
4, then. Forced by Did Wallace. To whose affairs did they relate?
1, the Earl of Cadwallader. 2, the Duke of Ceylon and his heir, Lord Trincomalee. 3, the Laird of Yell. And 4, Sir Lisbon Delahunty.
We are treading on hallowed ground. We must be circumspect. Recall that we have nothing but conjecture on our side.
Yet without conjecture, how shall we proceed?
Just so. Tomorrow, you will make exhaustive inquiries amongst the jewellers of Hatton Garden. I shall repair to the home of Mr. Rowland Stainyhurst. You do me great honour, sir, in making so free of your time this abominable morning.
Well, now, Inspector, I am as anxious as you are that the scoundrel who committed the murder should be laid by the heels. At the same time, however, I am unable to see how I personally can further your investigations.
I believe it has been proposed that Sir Lisbon may shortly be required to form a new government.
Great heavens, Inspector. How did you come by this intelligence?
Let us say it came to me indirectly, but from a source I believe to be unimpeachable.
Then, in all confidence, I must own that Sir Lisbon may well be our next Prime Minister. He will have confirmation within the next few days.
Precisely. And therefore, anything that may serve to keep Sir Lisbon in a congenial frame of mind during these anxious few days should be encouraged.
Of course. But you worry me strangely. What could possibly destroy Sir Lisbon's peace of mind? Say something, man.
Theo did Wallace.
I beg your pardon?
Theo did Wallace is the name of the murdered man. Does it mean anything to you?
No, sir, it does not.
Has that name ever hung on the lips of Sir Lisbon or her ladyship?
Never in my presence.
Forgive me, sir, but the question must be put. Has Sir Lisbon ever been blackmailed?
Blackmailed? That most blameless, that most chivalrous of men, the idea is appalling.
With respect to your affection for the gentleman, that was not a direct answer to my question.
Of course he has never been blackmailed.
Thank you, sir. Does the name Tang awaken any remembrance? Emily Tang or Hester Tang?
You baffle me increasingly. I know no one of that name, nor did I ever hear it before.
Very good, sir. Now, has Sir Lisbon no direct heir?
None. Mr. Wilbraham, his nephew, stands now as his own son would have done had fate chosen to spare his life.
There was a son, then. Who died?
Robert Delahunty elected to follow a military calling. When he was 18, Sir Lisbon purchased him a commission in the Duke of Portsmouth's cavalry. That same year, whilst his ship, the Redoubtable, was making its way to the Bombay Residency, it was wrecked off Perim in the southern Arabian Narrows. Only two lives were spared, those of a bum boatman and a sergeant of marines. All else perished. A malign providence, as if determined to augment its hatred of the Delahuntys, struck again 3 years later. Sir Lisbon's sister, Ambrosia, and her husband, then being engaged upon an extensive tour of Portugal, that country which gave Sir Lisbon his name, were set upon and murdered by bandidos.
Dreadful. Dreadful.
The slaughtered couple had left behind them in England their son, young Clooney, who was then made his uncle's ward for the term of his legal infancy.
A tragic narrative, Mr. Steinyhurst. But the sum of all is this. That Clooney Wilbraham, orphan and former ward of Sir Lisbon, is now his direct and only heir.
Such is the case, Inspector. And a better young fellow than Clooney to exercise those privileges that will someday be his, I cannot imagine anywhere in the world.
Morn, sir. Have I the honour?
Dynasty Shawcard, sir, of the detective.
Upon my soul. What have detectives to do with my premises?
You are Mr. Anderson Turnipseed, purveyor of fine jewellery to the late King William and the houses of Habsburg and Delaroba?
My father, sir, had that honour. See before you a scion of that stock. Edgar Turnipseed, at your service, sir.
I've called at many jewellers, sir, during the course of my inquiries, though none boasting so celebrated a clientele as your own.
Too kind, sir, too
those kind. Inquiries being relative to the recent murder in Cheyne Walk.
Lord, unpleasant.
To be sure, no one, however low in station he be, cares to have his cranium shattered by a pistol ball at close range.
Is it absolutely necessary? Give me the details unsparingly.
All details must pass in review before us, Mr. Turnipseed. To that end, I must ask you to cast back your mind some 3 months.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Refer to end September?
The very period, sir, to which my inquiries appertain.
My mind's cast back, sir.
From whom did you buy certain family jewels for a sum not less than £3,000?
Impossible disclose. Matters this nature, confidential sales, noble families in difficulties, set my apologies.
Would you have me drag you before a magistrate, Mr. Turnipseed? Would you enjoy a lengthy sojourn behind the bars of Euston Police Station?
There can be no crime in buying jewellery when the identity of the owner vouchsafed.
The only crime lies in concealing that identity when it is required during the course of an investigation into homicide.
You're putting a fella ticklish situation, sir. Noble name at stake.
Then let me assist you. You have only to nod your head or shake that extremity. No names mentioned by you or me.
Extraordinary fellow you are, Mr. Shawcard.
Would this jewellery belong to a certain lady of title presently residing at 101B Cheyne Walk? Thank you, sir. Would that lady herself have brought the jewels in?
Thank you, sir. Would a certain titled gentleman renowned in the House of Commons for his striking reticence have brought the jewels in? Obliged you, sir. Did the party who brought the jewels in request and receive cash money?
Absolutely amazing fella.
It is a sorry adventure, Roland, and I am greatly ashamed of my part in it.
There is no need to disclose your secrets to me. I am here simply to prepare you for what the inspector may come to ask.
As he intended?
As I'm sure he intended.
Then you shall know. As my oldest and dearest friend, you shall know before that fellow finds out for himself. Shortly after the news of Robert's death reached us, when Eleanor was still in mourning in Somerset, I came to London to attend the opening of Parliament. Business affairs took me to my solicitor's office in Chancery Lane. There I met, briefly, Miss Emily Tang, who also had business with Collinge and Brimacombe. Miss Tang had recently been disappointed in a lengthy chancery suit. I was full of grief over poor Robert's death. It seemed natural that we should console each other. Unhappily, I allowed our friendship to develop into an intimacy which was to express itself in the birth of a child to Emily. She, noble woman, was prepared to vanish forever, but I settled on her a regular allowance to be paid quarterly through the offices of Collinge and Brimacombe. From that day to this, I have had no word of Emily or her child, save that they are in good health.
And Eleanor knows nothing of this?
Nothing. The knowledge would destroy her, as surely as it will destroy my own career if it is bruited abroad.
But no one so far has come forward with this information and requested money in return for silence?
No one. No one. Could I have concealed such a predicament from Eleanor? From yourself?
Then all may not be lost.
So, turnip seed paid out. Good, 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 good. Lay them how you will, Dynasty. The pieces are beginning to assemble. The intricate pattern is almost complete.
But the murderer, sir? The homicide?
Suspicions. Deep suspicions. But no absolute proof. As yet.
Then how should you proceed?
I shall throw down a desperate gauntlet. Let us see who has the temerity to pick it up.
You have asked us all to remain here, Inspector, at great inconvenience to ourselves. I hope, sir, that you have a sufficient explanation for us.
I must at once tell you that the murderer of Theo Did Wallace is presently under this roof, Sir Lisbon.
No.
It is my intention to take that murderer into custody within the hour.
But... this is a monstrous and appalling accusation.
And one not uttered lightly. If I may persuade you all to listen to me for a very few minutes, I shall demonstrate the dreadful chain of events that led to the moment of retribution outside this house not 5 nights ago.
Is it vital that the ladies should be present, Inspector?
Sir, it is inescapable that all remain in this room.
We have nothing to fear, Lisbon. And both Caroline and I would wish to assist the inspector in any manner he may desire.
Thank you, your ladyship.
Inspector, forgive me that in this moment of genuine awe, I should have failed in my duties as a host. Will you, sir, take a cup of mulled claret?
With respect, Sir Lisbon, I cannot accept your hospitality when I'm about to distress the assembled company, however reluctantly. The mulled claret would be as gall, sir. As gall.
I appreciate your sensibility.
In brief, then, a certain adventurer named Theo Did Wallace formed a friendship with a mother and daughter name of Tang, who own a greengrocery and allied provisions hard by the Elephant and Castle. I see, Sir Lisbon, that the name is not unknown to you.
Proceed, sir.
With rare cunning, this Did Wallace established a connection between you, Sir Lisbon, and the family Tang.
I shall not offend decency by dilating on this. Suffice that, did Wallace, armed with this knowledge, and through no fault of a certain solicitor, prepared to embark upon a career of blackmail? Deviously, he chose to approach Lady Delahunty.
What?
Knowing that you, sir, might well be prepared to sacrifice your political future in order to have the blackmail exposed. Lady Delahunty, fearful for your career, sacrificed her jewels in that cause.
Eleanor, my dear, why did you not confide
the
in me?
The jewels fetched some £3,000 from the establishment of Mr. Edgar Turnupseed of Hatton Garden. This money was paid to Did Wallace, and Lady Delahunty hoped to have heard the last of that hateful name. But Did Wallace, learning of Sir Lisbon's proximity to the office of Prime Minister, determined to make an even more monstrous demand. I believe in the matter of disinheriting Mr. Clooney Wilbraham in Did Wallace's favour. This greed was his undoing. Did Wallace was at the rendezvous at a few minutes before six on that fateful evening. I suggest he was offered yet more money, that he refused, insisting on much greater rewards for his silence, that his interlocutor, driven beyond all normal restraints, shot him and vanished into the fog. By the time my assistant Shurcard began his inquiries here, that interlocutor was beneath this roof.
But, Inspector, this is a sorry tale. Days ago, you satisfied yourself that no one here could conceivably have been out by the river a few minutes before six when that wretch's life was ended so terribly. Our whereabouts are all accounted for.
Oh, so
yes, indeed.
Are they, Mr. Stanyhurst? Are they? Absolutely. Let me ask you all this. Who was it, at 5 minutes before six, who had the means and opportunity to leave this house unnoticed, dispatch the blackmailer, and return again to the house without being missed? And who, at noon, the day after the murder, carried to the firm of Collins and Brimacombe burial money for the dead man?
For heaven's sake, Inspector!
Someone who acted throughout, disinterestedly. That most loyal of souls and expeditious of servants. Education Greenleaf.
Greenleaf?
But this is...
my dear.
Smelling salts.
Her ladyship has fainted.
My instructions, Inspector, are to represent the interests of Sir Lisbon's butler. To that end, I must ask for an immediate interview with the unfortunate man.
Education Greenleaf absolutely denies the killing, Mr. Collinge. Denies it outright.
Oh, yeah, unless you intend to charge him with the murder at once, I shall demand his instant release.
I see I must make myself clear to you. Greenleaf is no more the murderer than you, or I, or Dynasty Shurcard. I arrested him in order to wring a confession from the true murderer.
This cruel and most unnatural procedure will lose you your post, sir, that I swear.
Oh, I have no absolute proof, sir, and I confess it. I need a voluntary statement of guilt. I believe I shall receive it within the hour. If I don't, you may call me Attila the Hun, and I shall suffer the appellation with all humility.
In view of this preposterous admission, I demand the immediate release of Mr. Education Greenleaf.
Yes, Shurcard.
Gentleman outside, sir, wishing to speak to you most earnestly.
Ah, and might his request have bearing on the Cheney Walk murder, Shurcard?
Certain of it, sir.
Inspector, I warn
show
you...
Show the gentleman in, if you please. Mr. Collins and I were expecting him.
Yes, sir. Mr. Clooney Wilbraham, sir.
The accused, the self-accused Clooney Wilbraham, was, as we have heard, the sole heir and legatee of Sir Lisbon Delahunty, in addition to the generous marriage settlement that Sir Lisbon had already arranged. He left the bookshop of Palette and Kidney and hastened through the fog to Cheney Walk. He pleaded with Didwallis. His pleas were laughed to scorn. Now, this was cold murder, gentlemen of the jury. Premeditated murder, and no sudden crime of passion. Cold murder performed to protect the accused's financial interests.
Morning, sir. Good morning, sir.
The devil take it, lad. It's a dreadful morning, a monstrous morning, a morning of sleet and wind. Why do you pester me with your inanities when you can see I'm preoccupied?
I was not aware, sir, of that fact.
Come closer. Can you read my writing?
I hope so, sir, though with some little difficulty.
It's the clearest hand in Battersea, boy. Read it. Read it.
Did Wallace described as fallow?
Sallow, you imbecile. Did Wallace was sallow.
Passion for greens, no traces, whereabouts for riding at Elephant Castle, dread of drowning, sergeant of marines and a bumboatman. Sir, I don't follow, Inspector. Why are these jottings on Did Wallace? The case is closed, and Cluny Wilbraham swings next week.
We have not heard the last of this affair. I feel it. My ribs know it. I lie awake at nights, lad, and I wonder. There's something deeper, darker, viler about this case, and we have not discovered it.
Sir?
Put on your hat and coat again, Steward Card, and rearrange your comforter. Whistle your tune, if you must. You and I are going to pay a visit to my lords of the Admiralty.
The coincidence, sir, can only be described as amazing.
Coincidence or destiny, Steward Card, call it what you will. These musty vaults of Admiralty have yielded up what may well prove to be the most vital piece of information in the entire case.
Can we be sure it is the same gentleman?
We have only to ask him.
It was off Perim, sirs, a treacherous island in the Arabian Narrows. The Redoubtable was driven by a squall onto a hidden reef of coral. Our hull was tore open and the ocean poured in. Oh, many bold lads was drowned within sight of land. Many more was taken by sharks. Tragic fate. Many more was battered to death against those fangs of coral. I was spared, gentlemen. And with me, a bum boatman what had come aboard at Aden got insensible drunk and woke to find himself bobbing about the Gulf of Araby.
Happy indeed, Sergeant, to be two men plucked from a watery grave when all else perished. If all else perished.
As to that, sir, I cannot positively swear.
Do you recall, during the voyage, a young ensign of the Duke of Portsmouth Cavalry named Robert Delahunty?
Do I recall him? Delahunty? Oh, bless you, sir. He was by then a prisoner under marine escort.
A prisoner?
A prisoner? Matter of peculation, sir. Matter of mess funds misappropriated. Ensign Delahunty was being held under close arrest pending a court-martial in Bombay.
Then, if the young scoundrel had escaped the hazards of coral and ocean and marauding sharks, if he, perhaps a mile or more from where you and the drunken bum boatman found safety, had himself waded through hot brine shallows to the security of some Arabian beach, if, I say, young Delahunty did survive, it would not have been in his best interest to make his way either back to Malta or on to Bombay, where the British military or the East India Company might surely have been made aware of his misdemeanours and themselves sent him for trial.
Supposing him to have escaped, sir, I venture to agree that he would have looked upon the shipwreck as a merciful deliverance from the disgrace and ignominy which would certainly have attended him else.
You are a capital fellow, Sergeant Clench, and I salute you again. It was the Widow Oliphant, with her many references to Did Wallace's fear of drowning, that put it first in my mind.
Oh, sir.
Then there was his passion for greens. Perhaps he developed scurvy during his long and doubtless rigorous journey from South Arabia to Europe. Well, in this I feel confident that Theo Didwallis and Robert Delahunty were one and the same. Greenleaf, I must speak to your master.
Sir Lisbon and Lady Delahunty are not at home, sir. But her ladyship said that if you should call, I was to give you this sealed letter.
I'm obliged to you, Greenleaf. Are you aware of the nature of this message?
I am not, sir.
Now, what have we...
Inspector Millions, since you are reading this note, it must mean that you've not left off your investigations. If you wish to speak to me, you must meet me at Harvard's Wharf at 9 o'clock on the evening of the 12th. I entreat you to allow this interview to be quite private between the two of us. Eleanor Delahunty.
The 12th, sure card?
The 12th is today, sir.
And Harvard's Wharf?
Liverpool, sir. Where the transatlantic packets sail for America.
My lady.
Inspector.
I admire your courage and your integrity. If there were some other way.
I thank you for coming so far and so fast to see me.
Sir Lisbon?
My husband is in his cabin. I gave him a sleeping draught with his brandy. I pray he may not awake until late tomorrow morning. When he does, he will find a letter from me.
Who is in your confidence?
Apart from faithful Clooney, only Mr. Stanyhurst. I was obliged to reveal much to him in order that he might somehow prepare poor Caroline for a period of abysmal horror.
Had I not called at your house, had I not received your letter, had we not been speaking now, what would you have done?
Mr. Wilbraham would have been exonerated once we were on the high seas. I should have sailed to America with my husband.
This gives me no pleasure, ma'am. I have no pride in this affair.
Oh, you are an excellent and assiduous detective. You must... You must...
You are faint, ma'am?
I am about to die.
What?
Will you support me a moment, Inspector?
Take my arm. Come. Try to walk with me over there, where we may sit. There. May I, without offence, support you, ma'am?
Put your arm round my shoulders. Thank you. I'm growing very weary.
What have you taken?
A fatal dose of chloral hydrate. I'm a coward, Inspector. I could not face a public trial and imprisonment and execution.
The circumstances are such that no judge would don the black cap, ma'am.
I killed. I have been discovered. I must suffer the punishment. When I am insensible, you will not call upon a doctor in an attempt to revive me.
This once I shall disregard the law and think only of mercy. You've suffered too much already. And alone.
I thank you, sir. Once I feared you, but now I judge you to be a compassionate man.
Our time together is running short, ma'am. Have I your assurance that tomorrow Mr. Stanyhurst is instructed to visit the prison governor and release Mr. Wilbraham from his quixotic and terrible predicament?
Mr. Stanyhurst will do that. Mr. Collinge also possesses similar instructions, which he will read on breaking open a sealed letter which has been in his safe since the morning after Clooney made his desperate proposition to me.
Clooney Wilbraham saw you, did he not?
Yes.
He was about to enter your house when he heard the shot.
Yes.
Saw you running back to the front door where you were ostensibly calling for your lost cat.
Yes, he was appalled, but he trusted me. He said, say nothing, do nothing. I shall return within the hour.
And on his hurried way to and from the Pont Street bookshop, he devised a scheme to give you temporary protection should our investigations come too close.
When Robert, when my own son, began his second blackmail attempt, I felt it necessary to take Clooney into my confidence. He was fully prepared to surrender his entire hopes if we could be sure that Robert would keep his word. But we both knew by then that Robert was
entirely evil. So evil that he threatened to marry Hester, his own half-sister, in order to make the scandal more complete. I knew this revelation would destroy my husband. He would have taken his own life had such a wickedness occurred. I pleaded with Robert. He said he meant to punish us for his wretched wandering years subsequent to the shipwreck. He would take our money, then our land, then our good name. And I shot him.
I guessed at much of this, but not that your son could have devised so unnatural and dreadful a method of blackmail. I shall suppress this whole aspect of the case, if it is in my power to do so. Sir Lisbon will have griefs enough without a further outrage to his mind.
I cannot see you, Inspector. Is it growing yet darker?
Hold my hand firmly, my lady. What you have waited for is about to happen. The ship has cast off.
I cannot see you, but your hand is warm.
Tight, ma'am. Hold tight. You are not alone.
Will you promise to tell the children, to tell Clooney and Caroline, that a wretched and evil woman begs their forgiveness, that it is her last wish that they put by this horror and marry soon and lead their own happy and blameless lives, far away from this shadow.
No one will look upon you as wretched or evil. You are, ma'am, the bravest woman it has been my privilege to meet. I'm thankful to be with you now.
The ship. She is putting out to sea.
Hard. Hold hard. The ship is moving, ma'am. Sweetly into the night.
Goodbye, Lisbon. Goodbye, my dearest.
Oh. My lady! Eleanor! What is a man to do?
In The Terrible Connection by Michael Robson, Inspector Millions was played by Nigel Stock, Dynasty Shawcard by Anthony Hall, and Lady Eleanor Delahunty by Leanne Orkin. Dennis McCarthy played Sir Lisbon Delahunty, MP, Simon Lack, Roland Stanyhurst, Diana Berryman, Caroline Stanyhurst, Trader Faulkner, Education Greenleaf, Michael Burlington, Clooney Wilbraham, Olwyn Griffiths, Hester Tang, and Kate Coleridge, Emily Tang. The Ancient Theker was played by John Hollis, Sergeant Clench by Stephen Thorne, Dead Bob by Peter Pacey, Mrs. Oliphant by Kathleen Helm, Mr. Collinge by Gerald Cross, and Counsel for the Prosecution by Malcolm Hayes. The production was by David Spencer.